Hello, welcome to a new episode of Content Rookie. Today we're going to have a much requested episode because me and my friend Vilgi from IKEA are going to talk about all things AI. ChatGPT, what it means, what it doesn't mean, how it could develop and could look like in a couple of years. You'll notice in the conversation, Vilgi is much more educated on this than I am, so I hope you enjoy his thoughts on the whole thing and why you shouldn't be afraid of AI and why maybe you should even embrace it. And yeah, how it may impact the day-to-day of a writer, no matter if you're a UX writer or a content writer, or maybe even a copywriter. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Welcome to the podcast, Vilgi. Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Thanks, Nicole. I'm Vilgi, and I originally come from Turkey. I am living in Sweden, south of Sweden, in called Lund, and working in Malmö for a small furniture company called IKEA. You might have heard of it. So I'm responsible for what we call framework IKEA.com, where we are basically elevating and harmonizing the global digital footprint of this company together with a few people. And before that, I was the UX manager for IKEA Home Smart, which became the first business area of IKEA in the last decade to be formed. And before that, I was at Above Agency, and before that I was at Teag and Boeing, and before that I was at Sony. So let's not go back too far.
You've been around the block.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm curious to hear just a little bit about, well, what makes you passionate about UX and maybe even what you specifically like about the position you're currently in at IKEA.
Definitely. I said that I'm actually maybe originally a hybrid between physical and digital, and that makes me very interested in these kind of topics where, of course, IKEA Home Smart was smack dab middle of that, but also we, I think I say that I'm almost as old as IoT itself in the years that I worked in, and that makes me very interested in actually talking about maybe UX strategy or the strategy of UX or how UX connects to strategy. And that's sort of like most of my thoughts are going in that area. And that also makes me think a lot about the different levels of considerations and thinking and how one develops themselves. Recently, I would say, it, compared to my two decades of career, I've become a people manager, and that made me think, start thinking a lot about how people develop and how people grow. And yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but those are the things that are top of my mind.
Great, thank you so much. I'm just curious, it's not the main topic of today's podcast, but just as a UX manager, I'm always curious to hear, I think you only relatively recently started hiring the first UX writers that you've ever hired, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, correct.
How did that process look like for you as not a UX writer yourself? What did you look out for? What actually ended up selling you on candidates?
That's a great question, and I think I should acknowledge that I have consulted a lot of people. So I am at the part of IKEA where we did not have any UX writers before. Mm-hmm. In some other parts of IKEA, there has been people who have been hiring UX writers. The first UX writer that was hired at Inca, which is their largest franchisee of IKEA, has helped me a lot. Wave to Amy from here. And then also people like you, you know, I've reached out to a lot of people to try to help me, and that was like a really big learning opportunity for us. And when it comes to the considerations, of course, everything has to align with the main and core values of a company, and for us values come before everything. But then how those values will come alive through words that are spoken directly to people. So it's an incredibly important job I don't think that we have appreciated this fact a lot from the beginning, but I think we've come more and more to the realization. And the person that is the first UX writer at IKEA of Sweden today, Lisa, she actually, we did our first interview in a park because it was like really the most heated part of COVID with the restrictions and everything. So I think it is really a lot about how you come across verbally as a person, you know, how considerate you are in terms of how you communicate. Says a lot about you as a communicator. Of course, it doesn't really necessarily reflect who you are as a professional UX writer, but I think it does a lot, maybe more indication compared to, for example, a UX designer or a visual designer. So that verbal aspect definitely is, you know, top of mind, you can say.
Yeah, I really love that you're sharing that. I don't think a lot of people have shared this before, and I actually completely agree with you. What I would like to say is that this is actually something I've brought up on a couple of the hiring committees that I've been a part of, because especially over the, well, not in recent times, but over the COVID times when the UX writing discipline really exploded and the headcounts really went up and there was a lot of hiring going on, I feel like this is exactly one of the things that was often overlooked. Like the actually listening to a candidate, seeing how they explain things. So much was focused on getting candidates through processes quickly, just maybe checking out their portfolio, that I really think taking the time to talk to someone, maybe a little bit more in detail, I think that's key too. I agree.
Yes, yes. I think I'm paraphrasing here. I can't remember exactly, but I think the first few sentences of the ad said, like, do you believe that words should be designed as carefully as pixels or something to that effect?
Yeah. Right. I love that. I remembered that ad because it was something that really made me also feel like, yeah, this guy really put in some time and thought into this. And I'm sure you're a great manager to Lisa, or were a great manager to Lisa if you're in a different team now.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
All right. But to kind of segue, not too subtly, I guess, into the main part of this conversation. So we want to talk a little bit about AI, ChatGPT. Is it going to replace us? Is it going to take away our jobs? Is it maybe just going to change the way that we're working? What are your thoughts on this?
Great question. It's very hot right now. And I also gave a talk related to this last week to a small crowd in Malmo Design Network. And the answer is no, it will not replace you. It will help you, but only and only if we understand the capabilities and the limitations of this new technology, and where we don't shy away from it. That is the short answer.
All right. So if you, when you're saying it's going to help us, how would that help look like?
I think imagine a dictionary. That's maybe the most basic technology that I can think of that actually helps a content professional. Imagine trying to do your job without a dictionary or any kind of lookup technology similar to that. So imagine now that you have a lookup technology that is far, far, far greater, that it can actually spew out alternatives to different phrasings, alternatives in different languages, and help you in different ways. So that is definitely a tool. And I can also say that I was sort of working together with, yes, I'm this old, like working together with the first generation of designers at Sony once upon a time when I was starting as an industrial designer at Sony, where they were the first generation not to use airbrush when they were sketching, when they were actually sketching in Illustrator and making. And that was a humongous deal. And a lot of maybe older designers saw Illustrator as something that would, that might kill their jobs.
Right.
But in fact, it made it easier.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a really good perspective, and I would agree with you. I think the one thing that a lot of us are worried about is just will companies slash clients really understand this? That it's really just something to help us do our work maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit more efficiently, or will they try to just hand our work to someone else, thinking that with the help of these AI tools, someone that maybe isn't skilled in UX writing or content design or any kind of writing would still be able to produce quality content good enough for what the company wants?
There are definitely a lot of risks, and what you mentioned is one of the largest risks I see, especially when it comes to content, because lots of people are reading a lot of Twitter threads about how ChatGPT can write content, and they're getting excited, maybe too excited, and they might think that this can replace people. To be honest, you still need a person to professionally understand the meaning and the impact and the UX outcome of those words, and basically weed out the bad parts and elevate the good parts. That doesn't change. And but at the same time, there's maybe even bigger risks with UX and AI. One of them being, for example, some AI engines might be trained to act like the user. So some people might try to eliminate user tests with maybe AI tests, which is not very different from like eliminating the creative forces with heavy A/B testing, you can say. But this is a little bit different, because what I can see that like the biggest difference between, let's say, if we compare the Illustrator example that I gave, versus the AI, that AI is going to develop so much faster than Illustrator did. And that is basically, we cannot see the maybe ahead of the curve maybe more than 2, 3 years right now. It's really tough to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I was giving a lecture just yesterday at Hyper Island, and one of the students in the break came up to me and specifically asked, also about ChatGPT and AI and what I think about it. So I shared that with him, and then he really wanted to know what I thought in terms of timeline. Like, when is it gonna become truly relevant for our jobs? When is it gonna really change the way we do content slash copy work? Do you have any thoughts on that speed?
I think that what really caught us by surprise was the maturity of ChatGPT per se. The thing is that people who are working with this, they already had access to a lot of the parts of what ChatGPT can do, and even a lot of it was freely available for a lot of people who wanted to get into it. But ChatGPT kind of like combined together a lot of the capabilities of what GPT-3 had already verbally when it comes to natural language, and packaged it in a human understandable way, as if you are chatting with an intelligent agent. And I think that maybe we can see a little bit the power of UX here. Hats off to the people working at OpenAI for making this possible. But as I said, I mean, this is maybe this is going to develop really fast, much faster than what we've ever seen in technology, because it's kind of like a lot of the there are a lot of competition, that's for sure. And then also AI is something that doesn't have any requirements when it comes to physicality. A lot of the other, like let's say AR or VR, it has a lot of dependencies to hardware that needs to be sold with it, and so on. But then I also want to add this. Training an AI model, it takes a lot of time and energy, and that's one of the reasons why the training data of ChatGPT goes only up to 2021 for now. So it cannot be constantly trained as it is built right now, with current data that is constantly coming into the internet. But I'm sure that they're working on it.
Yeah, I think that gives some really good perspective. I think for me, the most comparable thing that I've dealt slash worked with, I guess, are AI translation engines. And there I felt that they haven't really improved drastically for many, many years. But I guess it's not comparable, right?
Yeah, there's like, also I want to give another perspective here. When it comes to artificial intelligence, a lot of the aspects of artificial intelligence, and I want to put a disclaimer here. I'm definitely not a technical expert when it comes to artificial intelligence or machine learning or deep learning or any of that. I'm just like a sponge trying to gather information as it is, only to the extent that it is useful for me.
Right.
So with the disclaimer, I want to say that that it's quite important to understand like this what the training data actually means for the artificial intelligence, and that sometimes we have to understand that this is most of this is probabilistic, meaning that it comes to a certain percent when it comes to the certainty of the outputs, and it stops there. And that's one of the reasons why autonomous cars are not there yet, you can say,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to completely driverless, as they call, I think, level five driverless cars. It's really hard because you cannot really, you can't say that, oh, maybe we can just run over one person per year, something like that.
Right.
It needs to be like next to 100%. And translation is one of those things. I mean, it doesn't have to be 100% correct, but you really cannot machine translate something that has maybe that is mission critical, for example. So it comes to a certain point and it might stop there. So this probabilistic nature of AI is a critical thing to remember.
Gotcha. I think that makes a lot of sense. So what would you say then to the people that are facing the questions, oh, you need to get another job because an AI is going to replace you? What should they respond?
I mean, I would say that there are definitely like jobs that have disappeared off the face of the planet, such as elevator operator, or, you know, maybe typist. And one of the jobs that might actually be surprising for people to hear that it actually disappeared, that was a job called computer. I don't know if you heard of it, but computer initially was a vernacular that was used for people that could compute in arithmetics and trigonometry and advanced math. And there were hundreds, maybe thousands of people that did this, for example, in the Manhattan Project, where they were working on the first atom bomb. And then the computer became kind of a word that is used for machines. So it kind of changed its meaning because the people that were computers got help so much that they could elevate their job to another level. So they became computer scientists or mathematicians or other other professions. So maybe the thing that you're working with, I don't think that, for example, UX writer is going to disappear anytime soon, because I do believe that there's also stuff that computers are not necessarily super good at just yet. One of them is creative problem solving. And they are getting better at this, but they're not there yet. They can do, let's say, mindless creativity. But then creative problem solving is the act of synthesizing different possible outcomes and understanding which one might be the best solution for a given problem. So that's something that they are not very good at. And then the other thing that is much, much important, much more important, is ethics. They're not good at ethics just yet. They're only as good as the training data that they have been given. So
right.
We also have to remember the importance of the training data and the diversity of the training data in this case. So maybe this doesn't tell you to quit a certain job, but it tells you to elevate and give more importance to certain aspects of the job that you're doing rather than focusing on the parts that can be performed by the artificial intelligence.
Right. I think that was a brilliant answer. And fun fact, my grandma actually worked as a computer.
Wow.
It's always very interesting when I try to explain to her what I'm doing now on my computer. so we've had some good conversations about that. She's actually still pretty good with tech. She has her iPad and is on WhatsApp. And yeah,
amazing.
So maybe it did her well to work with that so early on in her life.
Amazing. Wow. Absolutely. I think that like being familiar with any kind of new technology is an amazing opportunity for all designers or content professionals or every professional out there. Just being aware of what it can do gives you superpowers in using that to your own advantage.
Exactly. I think you're kind of starting a really good argument here that instead of being afraid of it, we should be excited about it. And, you know, like I'm deep down, I'm a little bit of a hippie. So I think my main issue with this whole AI is going to take our jobs and you need to be scared for your future point of view just is that. But isn't that actually what we would love for AI to do, to actually get so good at something so we no longer have to do it, so we can spend our time walking in nature and, you know, doing what we actually want to do? But obviously society isn't built to do that because we all need to earn a living and, you know, work hard for that. But it really triggers me a little bit that the conversation is always so geared towards job security, because maybe we need to rethink on a bigger level.
Exactly. And I think there has been a lot of discussions when it comes to universal basic income and how AI and robots might be able to ensure that. My personal thoughts around this is that, you know, the mechanisms that make this world go around when it comes to the flow of capital and the governments and everything that makes all of the systems work will not allow that anytime soon, most probably. So it's probably a good idea to, let's say, bet in yourself and your own growth. As I said in the beginning, I mean, this is something that fascinates me, how people grow over time.
Yeah.
And how they evolve and, you know, how to have a learning mindset all the time and keep your feedback loops active with your surrounding. I think those are the things that, for example, AI can only do with our explicit instructions.
Right.
It cannot do it by itself just yet.
Exactly.
So that's an advantage we must use.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think in general, just being open to new technology. I think a couple of years ago was a big trend also in job ads. They only wanted to hire people that had a growth mindset. But I think very few people actually understand what that means. And it's really just, for me, openness and being willing to at least try something out, or, you know, be open to doing a different kind of process. And the same goes for technology. So at least try it out once, see how it feels, be open to trying to use it for your work or for whatever. And I think that's the best you can really do.
Exactly. Exactly. I think we are all almost always forgetting where we came from, you can say. There was like a very big discussion about like what UX is and can experiences be designed, if anyone remembers that, around 2007, 2008, coincides with the birth of the first iPhone. And coincidentally, I was a phone designer back then, working with the physical parts and also the interfaces. And Android was coming, and there were a lot of discussions around what phones can be in the future. And some people said that this is just a very short phase before we can have AR glasses that that actually are going to replace everything about what a smartphone is. Again, like reminding ourselves that, first of all, we have to understand the pace, the development pace of technology is very much dependent on the natural resources that it requires.
Right.
The natural resources that are required to make an AR glass stay on your face all day long is enormous, and it just doesn't compute. So it didn't go that fast as some people thought that it would. But when it comes to the natural resources that is required to develop an AI, that is really much, much less. So therefore, it's going faster. And it's also a technology that develops itself to a certain degree. Not really, but it's easier to think that way.
Right.
That's why the pace is so much faster.
Yeah, I think thanks for bringing that up. A fun fact about me is that I actually did study material engineering. So
wow.
I'm very aware of the material things that go into place for developing all this technology. My dad still works in the field, and sometimes I listen to him for hours explaining these things to me with varying levels of interest, of course. But yeah, it's definitely something to consider. All right, Bilgi, this has been great. Is there anything else you want to say to the listeners, either related to AI or just in general, before we close up this conversation?
I would say that right now is the time for some turbulence, you know, in the world, in the, you know, tech layoffs, and a lot of it is impacting us. I just want to say that, just as a final note, you don't have to hang your personal values out in the coat check when you're going to work.
Right.
I think there's an opportunity for all of us to carry that with us into the companies, into the work that we're doing. And maybe some of us won't be able to find companies that matches our values because of facts of life, you know, limitations of our employment situation or whatever. But
right.
I do think that if we put the pressure on as tech workers, as UX professionals or content professionals, I do think that we can maybe move some stuff. Just saying that I am hopeful about this and optimistic.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing. I think that's a really nice note to end this on. Thank you for joining
Awesome.
Us today.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It's been a pleasure.
And that was today's episode of Content Rookie. I hope you enjoyed it. As usual, you can find all of the guests' details linked in the info box if you want to reach out to Bilgi. Maybe he'd be interested in chatting a little bit more about ChatGPT or other AIs. And you can, of course, also find my information there. Thanks so much for listening and sharing and still bringing so much love and excitement for the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I hope you tune in again next time. Bye-bye. This is Nicole from Content Rookie.